Well, the story is told of a visitor to a famous Irish horse racing meeting. New to the sport, the visitor looked around for some people to guide him, for some people to sort of copy their actions. In the parade ring, where the horses were parading around prior to the race, he noticed there was a priest. And the priest was blessing one of the horses. He took a note of the name of the horse, and a little later was surprised to see the horse come in first in the race. Well, later on, again, he saw the priest in the ring blessing one of the horses. Again, he took note of the name, and a little later, too, it came in first. Well, this time he decided he was going to place a bet on the next horse that the priest appeared to bless. In the ring, he saw the priest this time kneeling beside one of the horses, Foxy Loxy, which sounds like a horse name, doesn't it? Eager to place his bet, he ran off and placed the money on Foxy Loxy. Well, the race began. Foxy Loxy was slightly ahead, but as the corner was turned, Foxy Loxy gradually fell behind and then dropped down dead. Well, that evening, the visitor was recalling the day's event to the owner of his guest house. Well, you see, said the owner, you've got to tell if the priest is blessing the horse or giving it the last rites. Well, this week, we're on week 7 of making disciples. And next week is our final week. And I'm kind of hoping that next week I won't have to talk too much. I think you hope that every week, don't you? But actually that some of you will come and share a little bit about how God has been at work in your lives over the past few weeks. It doesn't have to be anything too dramatic, but, you know, just have you grown a little bit in your discipleship? Has there been a particular verse or particular thing that we've been talking about that God has really been moving in your hearts? Have a think if there's something you can share. I'll be on the lookout for people to do that next week. Otherwise, I'll just come with a long talk as usual. It doesn't really matter to me, but I think it will make a big difference to all of us if you're able to share a bit. What's God been up to? How have we been finding it, trying to be disciples? And what does it mean when we say we are to follow Jesus, but we're also to try and copy him? So we've learned discipleship is not just about following Jesus. Discipleship starts with us making the decision about whether or not we want to follow Jesus. That's absolutely true. We have to decide for ourselves if in our hearts and minds we're prepared to accept Jesus' lordship and the fact that he died in our place. And that's something we're going to be remembering in just a few minutes, as you can see from the various items laid out on the table here. If discipleship is not just about following Jesus, then what else is it about? Well, as Chris Rogers has emphasized over these past few weeks, it's also about changing things just from our minds to our hearts to also our hands, putting our discipleship into action, learning to copy what Jesus did while he was with us on earth. Whether a new Christian or whether we've been Christians for many years, discipleship is learning to think and act like Jesus. It's an ongoing process. None of us will ever become exact models of Jesus this side of heaven. But we're to follow Jesus and become more like Jesus. Jesus' disciples, those 12 who we mentioned by name today, were directed time and time again to do what they saw Jesus doing. This means and still means today that discipleship is about becoming more and more like Jesus. At the start of Matthew 10, we read the following words. Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority. It says, gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. This morning we're thinking, how do we follow, but how do we copy Jesus? How do we do for the following and the copying of Jesus? And the first thing I want us to think about is the authority that Jesus has given us. Authority is very much in the news at the moment as the issue of following. You know, who do we follow? And we've seen that if you were at all aware of the news this week, the issue of politicians deciding whether they want to follow one statement or another statement. It's all very, very confusing. But with the news dominated by Brexit, I thought, well, I can't really ignore that fact in church. I'm sure you're all wondering what to make of it. It is very confusing, I think you'd agree. So in order to help us, I've come across a short video that I think ought to clear things up for us just a little.
Please, baby, you have to give me a second chance.
I've already said no. It's over.
You've never even given me a proper reason.
You're too controlling.
I ask your opinion before I do anything.
You don't respect my boundaries.
Oh, we both agreed on an open relationship.
Look, I feel like I'm losing my identity.
Oh, now you are just blaming me for your own personal problems.
All I know is I'm unhappy, and I need to be on my own for a while.
So you are off the market?
Well, I might start a new relationship.
Oh, really? Just like this, huh?
Yes, why not?
Oh, well, maybe you are not as hot as you think you are, eh?
Well, there's that American guy.
He's not interested, he's only into himself.
Well, then there's India.
Your ex-boyfriend, seriously? That was a toxic relationship? All you did was take, 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 and you call me controlling?
I'm leaving you. I've put your stuff in boxes on the table.
I see you are keeping the Coventry International Transport Museum.
That was a gift.
Since you have woken him up.
Oh, where are Mommy and Daddy, Faye?
Daddy's going away for a little while, sweetie.
But I don't want Daddy at all.
Well, it's between myself and your father, so let's go back to bed.
Yes? Daddy is still going to be here, okay?
We'll see about that.
Excuse me, Mom?
I want full custody.
Oh, no. He stays with me.
You can't use him as some sort of pawn.
Oh, you do not even know his name.
Ireland.
Northern Ireland.
But whatever!
Why don't we ask him what he thinks?
Oh, it doesn't matter what he bloody thinks! Yeah, it's what's best for me, for the family!
Well, okay, you want a divorce? Fine, you can have one! But I am not going to make this easy! I am going to draw things out until the last minute! And I hope you like negotiating, because this is going to be excruciating!
Fine!
Fine! See you in Brussels!
As soon as I've turned 18, I'm out of here!
Doom-da!
There we go. I thought it made it really clear for us. So, away from Brexit, what else can we think about? Well, today is St. Patrick's Day. I don't know if you noticed that, did you? We can maybe not say anything to Anne. St. Patrick is the patron saint of Ireland. This, of course, means that he was actually born in Britain, Kilpatrick in Scotland, to be more precise. He was born, according to the records, in about 387 AD, and he ended up in Ireland when he was captured by Irish pirates and taken as a slave, age 16. After 6 years, he escaped from Ireland. On his return to Britain, he became a priest and eventually a bishop. We can imagine that he wasn't exactly over keen to ever go near Ireland again, given his earlier experiences. Nevertheless, God placed it on his heart to go back to Ireland as a missionary to share his faith with the people of Ireland. There are many myths about St. Patrick, including one that St. Patrick drove all the snakes out of Ireland. And it's certainly true that today there are no snakes at all in Ireland. And according to those who know these things, that's because there's never been any snakes in Ireland. The snakes are a reference to the devil. We can get that, of course, from Genesis, can't we? The serpent. And St. Patrick was seen to be driving out pagan gods and pagan religions as he told people about Jesus. How do you return to a country where you were captured and taken as a slave? How do you take on evil in order to share the gospel message? How are we to be disciples of Jesus? Well, the answer lies in the authority that we have. St. Patrick, any of the great missionaries we can think of from history, ourselves included, are given the same authority that Jesus gave to his disciples. Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority. To be a disciple of Jesus, you and I need that authority. It's slightly frustrating, perhaps, for us this morning that we cannot study to gain that authority. You can't go off to a Bible college or a university and take a degree in Jesus' authority and graduate with that authority. You cannot train it and come out with an apprenticeship in authority. You cannot grasp it, just take a chunk of it and have some authority. The authority of Jesus is an authority that disciples of Jesus, that you and I, can only receive. This is what Jesus offers to those who want to follow and copy him. Jesus offers us the authority that we will require in order to be able to follow and copy him. If over the past few weeks we've been doing our discipleship groups and doing our homework and things and thought, well, do you know, actually this discipleship stuff, it just requires a bit more effort on my behalf. Now, it is true that we need to make an effort. I get that. I need to do the same. But if we think that the only thing we need to do is make a bit more effort, we've misunderstood this, haven't we? Jesus offers us authority. It is a spiritual authority, a spiritual power that can only come from God. As Christians, we can set out to live lives that are good, lives that we hope will be pleasing to God. And we can misinterpret that as that God wants us to live fairly quiet, peaceful lives. Be good. You know, we shouldn't swear. We shouldn't show videos that have rudeness in them or shouty people in them. We should try and be polite, nice Christians. We live in a culture that, while not openly hostile to Christians, can be often fairly apathetic. So we think that, well, the best thing we can do as a Christian is not upset or rock the boat. Let's just live fairly quiet lives where our faith is private and within our family and within our church, and we hopefully won't get into trouble. In doing so, we can forget that as disciples, we have been given authority. You have, and I have, an undeserved, unearned spiritual authority, because it is given to us by Jesus. And because it's given to us by Jesus, it's an authority we should take seriously. Jesus, it said, called his 12 disciples and gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. Chris Rogers writes, modern day Christianity is so caught up with church going that there's a danger we miss the radical life Jesus calls his disciples to live. As Mother Teresa said in an interview, rather than simply make it safely to heaven's door, we should hop, skip, and jump through life. Don't play it safe. Be playful. The life of a disciple is a disciplined one of following and imitating Jesus. This morning, you and I have authority. You might want to just take a moment to kind of grasp that with your head. If you are a follower of Jesus, you are given the same authority that Jesus gave to those 12 disciples. You think, well, so what? I mean, Keith, that's just a strange verse there because they go out doing healing and all that stuff. Okay, what does it mean? If we have the authority given to us by Jesus, then that means we ought to be confident. When we encounter people who don't know Jesus, when we are living out our discipleship, we ought to be confident. None of this sort of timidity and sort of saying, well, I need to back down because I'm only getting myself into trouble. We have the authority given to us by Jesus. Therefore, we can be confident when we are telling people about Jesus. We can be confident when we are faced with dilemmas and we know that the right thing to do is perhaps going to make us a little bit unpopular around here. We can be confident in using our hands to serve others as Jesus calls us to serve others. The other thing authority does, as Chris Rogers hints out there, it not only gives us confidence, but it enables us to take risks. We have an authority given to us by Jesus. That authority also means we are sent by Jesus. In the section of Matthew that we just read, those 10 verses there, where are the disciples of Jesus sent to? Well, we might very well say, without looking back at the passage, they're sent to all the ends of the earth, aren't they? Oh, no, that comes later. Where are they sent to in Matthew chapter 10? Well, actually, they're not sent to the Gentiles. That's the people who weren't Jewish. They are sent to the people of Israel. They are to start with those closest to him, to the lost sheep of Israel. Later, Jesus' followers would be sent throughout the world to the ends of the earth. But at this starting point, they're sent to the lost sheep of Israel. Does that mean that being a disciple of Jesus undervalues overseas mission? No, it doesn't. There is a huge amount we can learn from God's church overseas. That's why it's so valuable if we get the opportunity to go and visit God's church overseas. There is a huge amount we can learn from God's people working in contexts very different to our own. It might be one of much poorer than our own. It might be one where the physical landscape and climate change are impacting people's daily lives much more than they are here. It might be one where the church is really, really growing or really under pressure and has to be quite secretive due to the political and religious atmosphere of a nation. Mission overseas is vitally important. There are still too many areas of our world where people do not know about the good news of Jesus. Quite shocking when we think about how easy it is in many ways to get information across through technology today. But at the same time as saying mission overseas is vitally important, let's not think that mission is only somewhere else. The only place you can do mission is overseas. The only place you can go and tell people about Jesus is the ends of the earth. Mission is everywhere, including the places closest to home. In a sense, Jesus this morning is giving us as his disciples, as his followers, the authority to be missionaries. Wasn't an interesting phrase, those of us who are in our discipleship groups this week, when we heard the video from Chris Rogers, when he says, what is it? Something along the lines of, you know, in effect, the only Jesus people will meet is us. I don't know quite if I agree with that statement. I don't even know if I haven't said it right. But it was quite a statement that made me think all the same. How are people going to encounter Jesus? Actually, it's going to be me and you. Unless they mysteriously go off and get hold of a Bible or have a dream or something, the most common way is going to be when they meet other Christians. And that's going to be us. As a follower of Jesus, would you ever call yourself a missionary? I know there's a whole lot of stuff, not necessarily good stuff, connected with that term. But do you think of yourself as someone who has the authority and the commission from Jesus to go out and to share his good news? I often pray that one day our church will be commissioning some people to go out and serve overseas. There is much we as a church could give to overseas mission in addition to what we do already. There's much we can learn from it too. And I would say to you this morning, if you're feeling God begin to nudge you in the direction of going overseas, well, you know, don't restrict it just because you can't see how that's possibly going to work. You know, it's all right well for you, Keith, but, you know, if I was to go over to Africa, I'd get paid a pittance on my mortgage here. And oh, I know there's huge difficulties getting there, but don't let that restrict your vision. Explore it with God, pray about it, and start traveling in the right direction. One day, some people are going to be going overseas from this church, and that's just a fact. The only question is when. I couldn't tell you when. But here's another certainty this morning. The majority of us will be missionaries at home. Some of us, a few of us might be called to go overseas, and we will look forward to that day when we shall commission them, pray for them, and go. They will go off. But most of us are given the authority and the commission from Jesus to be missionaries at home. Who this morning are the lost sheep Jesus is calling you to? Now we're thinking for a moment, what is a lost sheep? A lost sheep is surely one who does not have a shepherd to lead or to guide them. Who are the lost sheep Jesus is calling you to? Are there lost sheep in your place of work? Are there lost sheep on your school run? Or among your friends? Or the neighbors? Do you know who lives either side of you? A lost sheep needs to find its shepherd. Because without a shepherd, the sheep just go wandering all over the place. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. This morning, Jesus has given you and I authority. This morning, Jesus has called us to go out and to help those lost sheep rediscover or discover their shepherd. It's a clear mission. And the reason for that mission, Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is near. You know, as Christians have read Jesus' words over the centuries, if Christians have tried to work out what it means, they've taken phrases like the kingdom of heaven is near, and they've said, this means, people, that there isn't much time. Now, that's quite difficult for us because we say, well, it's over 2,000 years since those words were written or at least spoken by Jesus. Looks like there's been plenty of time, Keith. But it'd be a very brave person to say there was lots of time left. We do not know when Jesus will return, but we do know that when he returns, first of all, the world will recognize it, and secondly, that's it in terms of mission. Jesus will be back to judge the living and the dead, and those who don't know him, well, their future looks pretty bleak. There isn't much time. And as Christians have realized there isn't much time, they've gone out and done the work that Jesus has called them to do. Is it just about sharing our faith? No, it is not. Look at the list of things Jesus gives to his 12 disciples there. I mean, you could have a whole talk about that, couldn't we? He's picked 12, one of which is going to betray him. That's really interesting. Heal the sick, he says. Raise the dead. Cleanse those who have leprosy. Drive out demons. We look at that list and we go, well, that's good. Thank you, Jesus. That's me off the hook. Because there ain't going to be a whole lot of that going on around here, is there? If it's someone sick, I'm going to take them to the hospital. That'll deal with that issue. Raise the dead, you're talking crazy talk. Cleanse those of leprosy, we don't have too much of that in lower early, praise God. And drive out demons. Just, come on, that's in a different sphere, Jesus, to what we live in. What if we were to think of this not as a closed list, as the only thing Jesus' disciples would be of an authority to do, but what if we were to take this as a list of things that were the immediate needs in this immediate vicinity? These are a list of needs, perhaps. I simply leave it as a question, that these are disciples are being sent to meet. In other words, the immediate need around there was to be healed of leprosy, was to be healed from sickness, to have demons driven out. Raising the dead, okay, a little confusing there. What might a list of needs look like for our area? Would Jesus turn around and give us the same priorities that he gave his 12 disciples there? I don't know for sure because Jesus isn't here to give the answer, but it might look something like this in connection with other things that Jesus says. Love your neighbor. Love God. Befriend the lonely. You think this morning you got authority from Jesus to go out and start that kind of thing? You think loneliness is an issue in our lost sheep around here? Comfort the stressed. How many people do you know who are seriously stressed about their lives? You see, some of them are Christians. I get that. It's not unique to non-Christians, but there are many people who could do with God to help them through their stress. Encourage the discouraged. Help those in poverty. You're saying there's no poverty around here. I'm saying you've just not got your eyes open, mate. Calm those who are stressed. House those who are homeless. Feed those growing hungry. Look at the area where you live and work. Pray about it. You might say, Keith, that list you've given, it's hopeless, doesn't reflect our area at all. Well, pray about it. What are the needs where you are? Your sphere, the place where God has placed you. And as you pray about it, God will reveal the needs of people. And as God begins to reveal these needs, don't sit back and expect someone else to do something about it. As I hope we've gained from those past few weeks of making disciples, Jesus has given us a mind to think, a heart to respond and pray, and hands to do something. And we do so with the authority Jesus has given us. You know, that authority Jesus gave to his disciples is an authority to go to the places we live and work. Is an authority where we recognize that Jesus has given us the resources we need. What does it say there? Freely he says, I have given. Freely you have received, freely give. We've got so many resources that we can use for God's work. We're going to take a moment to pray before I hand back for some sung worship before we have communion.